Hello, what have we here?
Hey everyone, welcome back to Resistance Radio. It's episode 7. Hope you all enjoyed last week's show, because this week, it's all about Finn. As always, I'm Mikey B, and I'm joined by my co-host, Danya.
What's up, guys?
And we also have Kristen joining us this week.
Hi, guys.
As always, if you want to get involved in our conversation, you can get a hold of us on Twitter at @RRadioPodcast, leave us a comment on our Facebook page, or send us an email through our website, resistanceradio.net. Heck, leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hypable.com to tell us what you think of the show. All right, so starting out every week when we have a new co-host on, Kristen, tell us about your history with Star Wars.
Well, I have a younger brother. He's 2 years younger than me. And growing up, I credit him with my seeing a lot of movies I probably wouldn't have picked out myself, but I'm so glad I've watched. So he made me watch the original trilogy a million years ago, along with Indiana Jones and Back to the Future and all of them. So I really credit him with making me the film fan I am now. But we also did go and see all the midnight releases for the second trilogy, and I didn't get to see the new one with him in December. We ended up seeing it separately because we live in different states now, but we did see it together over Christmas as soon as we had a chance. So I am a fan. I'm not like a major, I don't know everything. I am not one of those, I'm so not well-versed, but I do know the basics. I do know the characters, and it's a fun world. It really, really is.
Awesome. I love having different perspectives here on the podcast. So let's go ahead and just jump right into the news. We have some interesting information about Rogue One. Nope, not the trailer. We have a new Rogue One comic and novel coming this fall. So we already knew we had a Rogue One Force Friday with all the toys. And just like the Force Awakens, where we had a couple novels released before, and as well as comics with the Journey to the Force Awakens, it looks like we're having at least one book and one comic. What do you guys think about that?
I mean, it's kind of, I'm excited the way that I would be excited for anything Star Wars related. It's just a lot more difficult to start getting myself hyped up for a lot of like the materials leading up to Rogue One, because I don't have anything to base it on, because we don't have a trailer still. I'm starting to get really antsy for the trailer. I would like to have some kind of look and feel of what this is going to be like. Like, I just want something about the tone of it, a little bit about the characters to kind of inform my reading of comics and novels and stuff. But right now, we don't have any kind of basis for excitement, almost. Like, at least with stuff like the Journey to the Force Awakens, a lot of stuff was like building on the original trilogy stuff and the original trilogy characters and so on, and we'd seen a lot of stuff, like we'd seen trailers and we'd gotten little bits about the new characters, so we had enough there by this point that when they started introducing the Journey to the Force Awakens, we could get really excited about it. But again, we're getting like close to the 6 month point until Rogue One comes out, and we've still got no official trailer.
Yep, no official trailer. So I agree with you a little bit that I'm kind of like not hesitant, but it's difficult to get really excited about it. But for the comic wise, I know we're going to get, it says 3 issues and a one shot. And then the book title for the Star Wars novel is going to be called Star Wars Catalyst. According to Del Rey, it's a thrilling must-have prequel to Rogue One. We don't really know anything else other than that. We don't know who's writing them or who's involved with it. But it might be, you know, it might be interesting, because I will tell you, some of the books from Journey to the Force Awakens, like, I was not a huge fan of Aftermath myself. It took me a long time to get through it because it was just hard to get into. But Lost Stars, I picked it up and was just, I ate the whole thing up. It was wonderful. So I definitely feel like these could be good media added to the Star Wars universe. As well as, you know, when you look at the comics, like I love Shattered Empire, which also helped us learn more about, you know, Poe. So it's one of those things where, well, not about Poe, but about his parents.
Shara Bay, my bae.
Exactly. So, you know, so I don't know. So reading some of this stuff might be, it might be fun, especially with the time period. You know, I would actually wonder if they would take a chance and include somebody from like Star Wars Rebels or someone in there to help bridge the gap, even if we don't see those characters in the film. You know what I mean? Just kind of tie the whole universe together. You know, even though it is a big universe, you know, Star Wars, the stories have always kind of played on this small universe thing. Everyone is kind of related in a way, which is why Rey is Luke's daughter.
I have to get in
every episode since you guys argue with me, but it works, right?
We'll get to like, we'll get to the next film and I'll be like, I'll start saying it. It'll be like subliminal messaging. And like, by the time we get to it, I'll start saying it for you. I'll be like, and raise Luke's daughter. Wait, where did that come from? What?
It'll just come out somewhere.
Yeah. But
yeah. The Catalyst looks like it could take place right before Rogue One. Which is kind of like the Before the Awakening book with these one-shots of Rey, Finn, and Poe, how it happened almost right before the movie. So it could be good. And I will be honest, the artwork for Rogue One that has been released does look awesome. I just don't know anything about the story, haven't seen a trailer. You know, it gives me some intrepidation about it. But we at least are getting some information about Rogue One stuff now, so that's kind of cool.
Some news is good news, I guess, instead of no news is good news. But yeah, I don't know. I'm really ready for a trailer. I think once we've got a trailer, I'll be feeling a little bit more settled about it. But until that point, I'm just kind of like, yes, and the trailer when? But
yeah,
I'm starting to hear more rumblings that it could be coming with Captain America. So I'm starting to see rumblings of that a lot more in like places like Reddit and stuff. So,
well, that's what I'm thinking too now, because Eric saw Batman versus Superman already. He was at the
what?
Yeah, he Snapchatted me. He was at the IMAX showing of it. Of course, Eric saw it already. And no trailer. He won't tell me anything about the film, but he said no trailer. So, you know, so I'm definitely not thinking that what we saw was leaked actual footage of the trailer. I think it was just another hoax, but eventually, hopefully, we'll get a trailer. And I guess it makes sense for them just to wait off until after the Blu-ray DVD is released and Force Awakens is kind of wrapped completely up before they start promoting this. But I almost wonder if they're going to do that with Episode 8, if they're going to wait till Rogue One is completely wrapped and done before they, you know.
They better not.
I hope they won't. I actually would love for them to have something that, you know, kind of how Marvel has ties all their films together with like that snippet at the end. I kind of almost wonder if we can see like a snippet at the end of Rogue One that relates to Episode 8 somehow. You know, some revelation about Luke or whatever that can play to 8. Because I would just love for all of them to be tied together somehow still, even though these are not part of the, I guess, the saga films, the actual saga films. I don't know. We'll see what they end up doing with this. We're still waiting for a trailer. Anyway, moving on. So there was some leaked information, I don't know if it's true or not, from the set of Episode 8, that Episode 8 may have a funeral, like we saw in Episode 1 with Qui-Gon, and Episode 6 for Darth Vader himself, that it may have a funeral for Mr. Han Solo. I don't know how I feel about actually having a funeral for Han, especially it being in the next film.
I mean, would it technically count as a funeral in the traditional sense, or would it be a memorial service? Because there isn't technically a body to bury. Oh my god, I feel so bad saying this. There isn't a body to bury or cremate, because Starkiller Base exploded and he fell from that bridge.
Yeah,
and they definitely didn't go back for the body.
You know, I don't know, and you know, it's interesting because the you know, one, Harrison Ford said he was very happy that it was very he was very happy with Han's demise. It's very fitting to use that character. He's been arguing for Han Solo to die for 30 years, just because his sacrifice for the other characters leads gravitas and emotional weight to it. Is kind of what he said. So I guess him being, you know, maybe them doing that would bring the film kind of like back on a somber note, saying like, hey, you know, when he is safe, which is, I guess, good in a way, because you really don't know, you know, you don't want to expect that our hero is going to survive and win at the end of the day. But at the same time, like, that's what you want from a Star Wars film, is you kind of expect it to be the way it's going to be. So I don't know. Like, even in Revenge of the Sith, even though you saw the fall of Anakin Skywalker, you knew that was coming. Maybe because we saw episode 4, 5, and 6 beforehand, but you knew everything was going to be inevitable. So with Han's death, I guess it does add to all the other characters, and reminding us at the beginning of the film might be good. I don't know.
Yeah, I was going to say, the only way I can see them really using it would be at the beginning of the film to kind of draw you back into where Force Awakens ended and where they left off, and kind of pull you right back into that world. Like, I could see them using it that way, and it would be a nice, like, bridge right at the beginning. But after that, I would hope it would only be something like that, like something at the beginning to kind of pull you back in.
Yeah, and that's the only thing I can think of, but I feel like the somber note of even just Rey telling Luke about Han's death, and Luke even just acknowledging it and saying, like, I know I felt it, or something like that, like, that would pull me back in enough. But I don't know. Yeah. Like, apparently, just according to the notes, there are, have been, it may be on a more of a water world where this happens, and there have been, what does it say? He may be getting a more watery send-off. The site reports that there have been seen costume filming in the middle of the ocean. So, I don't know how...
But I don't understand. It legitimately would just be them in the middle of the water. There's, like, nothing they've got.
Well, it might be, you know, maybe it's something for Chewie to mourn, you know? Closure, if you
yeah.
will.
Yeah,
or something symbolic that represents him for them to mourn. Like, I could see something like that being yeah. sent off.
Yeah, or even just like a military send off type thing for the, you know, for the resistance. He was a general in the, you know, with the Rebel Alliance and stuff like that. So it could be like a military send off type thing.
Yeah.
And when you think about it, like, think about it's the Imperial Navy. Like, all the spaceships and everything is, they're a navy, not an air force or anything like that. So being on water at least kind of makes sense. I don't know. I'm stretching a straw here for this, but yeah. So that came out. That's interesting. That was from Metro. So we'll see. I haven't really seen many reliable things from them in the past.
Metro. I mean, they're a UK thing. They basically are a little newspaper that typically gets circulated on, like, the London Underground. So it's like the paper that they give out for free on yeah. the underground in London.
Yeah, so it's kind of like, hey, who knows? We'll see. It almost felt like a forced article, but, you know, it was...
Uh-huh. But I'm forced.
Anyway, let's move on to Lupita as Maz. So we also had a clip of The Force Awakens behind-the-scenes release. Again, this is promotion for The Force Awakens Blu-ray that comes out on April 5th and the digital HD on April 1st. But it's a nice little video of Lupita as Maz Kanata. It's pretty cool. Like, it shows, I don't know if you guys have watched it, but I'm excited for this because they actually did this in, they released it, but they show her actually acting. And even with the facial expressions, like, they were able to show her real time what Maz would look like in response to what she was doing. So they were able to have the actors and her actually act and have Maz come to life in real time. Obviously, it wasn't what we see in the final film, but her facial expressions and everything lead to that character, which is really kind of cool, seeing her turn around and scream Han Solo's name and then, like, side by side seeing Maz Kanata doing it. So I really am a fan of this behind the scenes look of Maz Kanata. So I'm just excited, even getting more excited for the Blu-ray, just because I want to see more like this. What do you guys think of the clip that came out?
I thought it was really cool, like, seeing all of the motion capture and how they do all of that is always fascinating to me. And seeing Andy Serkis like on set working with her, like that's really fun for me. And yeah, I really enjoyed the little clip. I will be checking out all of that bonus footage for sure. So I'm geeked to see that they at least have something regarding Maz, because she was such a powerful character in that movie that she sticks out in my brain, and I'm geeked.
Yeah, I'm super into it as well, because I love stuff like this, motion capture. But here's the other thing. What I really, really, really love about this is that it is going to show that as much as we're going to get to see Lupita's performance as Maz and be able to see her interacting with the rest of the cast, and we get to see all of the motion capture stuff, we are also going to get a lot of what goes into it to make it come to life as much as it does on the screen, because part of it is the motion capture stuff, but the amount of work that needs to be put on top of that to pick up the nuances of that performance, because motion capture isn't perfect. It's not going to get absolutely everything, and you need to like really, really get into the tiny details. So seeing like them, you know, adjusting it on set and seeing what she looks like, I think it's amazing. And I have so much respect for like all of the animators that have to actually work on top of the motion capture stuff to really bring those performances to life and do justice to people like Lupita and Andy Serkis. Like, I absolutely love seeing stuff like this. I just hope, I really, really do hope that Andy Serkis keeps his mouth shut a little bit in this, because he says some really horrible things about the animators on top of motion capture sometimes, and I really hope he doesn't say anything, because it'll upset me. But I'm really looking forward to seeing this a lot.
No, I agree. Now, I think the most important thing to realize is as they release this clip, Maz Kanata also has an emoji from the Star Wars app for your iPhone or Android device.
So really?
That, yeah. So if you go to the Star Wars app, if you guys haven't done this, it's pretty cool. Like, I use this app, well, weekly, because I do the podcast now, but I use the app fairly often just to kind of keep up with, like, the official Star Wars news, not from anywhere else. But if you go to GIFs and Emoji, not only are there great GIFs to, like, post in, you know, messages and stuff, but now there is a Maz Kanata emoji icon.
The greatest thing.
And at least on the iPhone, you should just be able to tap and hold to copy it, so you don't have to, like, do anything else, and then go to your message and just double tap and paste it. But yes, we now have a Maz Kanata emoji, which should be right there at the top for everybody. It's kind of awesome.
Mikey, you're doomed. Everything's going to be Poe emojis.
That's absolutely fine. Now, the only problem with this, and I will say that there is one little problem with the Star Wars app and the emojis here. They need to integrate these emojis into Facebook or something else, because it's kind of annoying to go back and forth between the app to paste them. So they're not really emojis. They're actually just little images, which they're adorable, but I would love to actually be able to just like integrate them as a keyboard on the phone or something like that. But anyway, but yes, now we have a Maz Kanata emoji icon, which is just awesome. Okay, moving on. More young Han Solo talk. Taron Egerton apparently isn't in the talks, or is he? Don, you want to tell us a little bit more about this one? There was a video from, was it Jonathan Ross? Is that right?
Yeah, so the Jonathan Ross show is like a talk show that airs over this side of the pond, and Taron is actually going around with Hugh Jackman and a couple of other people promoting his new film, Maddie the Eagle. And of course, as you do, brought up the question of, hey, so we hear you're in the running for the new Han Solo movie. And he was like, well, I've heard those rumors, but hey, Disney, Lucasfilm, if you actually want to contact me about this, then please do. I don't know if he's genuinely not in the running, or if this is classic misdirection. Because everyone who's in the running for a role that big is obviously going to be like, no, I'm totally not in the running for this. This isn't a thing. But He does an incredible Chewbacca impression if you've watched this video.
Yes, it was quite impressive. I did watch it. And I think when you're casting a movie with a role this iconic and big, the easiest way is to just deny. So I can imagine, even if he has been in meetings and done auditions and whatever, it's probably just easier to say, nope, I know nothing. I haven't talked to them. What are you talking about? And then, you know, if he ends up getting the role 6 months down the line, be like, I couldn't say anything, you know, like they wouldn't let me. So, yeah, I don't necessarily believe that he hasn't heard anything, but we'll see.
You know, it wouldn't surprise me, even just being in an audition and in the talks about it, like the early stages, there's probably an NDA around it already, just because he may have to read a one sheet or something like that, synopsis of what he's doing, you know, how much would he need to have a stunt double, stuff like that would probably be related to it, and they just don't want that released. So I wouldn't be surprised if he has been in the talks, but he just can't talk about it, which makes sense why he's like, contact me, they're interested.
Also, can I just ask, there's like a little autoplay video that started kind of going like at the end of this video when I got to it. What is people's obsession with wanting us, like, I say us, being someone from Wales, what is people's obsession with getting us to say the longest place name in Wales on command? Because it happened again in like these interviews. They were like, hey, can you say that one thing, that place name in Wales? And I'm like, they're going, what is people's obsession with that? It was crazy. Did you see the little autoplay video that started? Well, kind of, it shows it in like a little window inside this video.
Yeah, I saw that one too, because it kind of like grabbed my attention and I watched it, and they made Luke Evans say it too, which I think is hilarious. Yeah, I don't know. It's just trivia.
I didn't like, watch it, but I saw what you were talking about. I don't know.
Yeah, it's just a thing he can do that not everyone in the world can. So
I don't know. I was talking with my cousin about this as well. She's Welsh, and I was like, people are like really obsessed with getting us to say it. I'll say it for people just because I'm like, I'm avoiding saying it because genuinely it's a mouthful. Like, it's actually shortened to Llanfair Pwch in Wales, because even we can't be bothered to say the whole thing all the time. But it's
like
that.
I feel like you need to say it right now.
Yeah, okay. Llanfair Pwch Gwynger Gogerych Wyn Dorbl Llantysilio Gogogoch. It's just a place name. It's. But it's, yeah. I don't know. It just makes me laugh all the time. I'm like, so I'll be like out hanging with people and they're like, hey, say the thing. And I'm like, oh God, buy me a drink first.
hey, you get a free drink.
Yeah.
Well, now you'll have a recording of you saying it. So just save it on your phone. Yeah. And when people ask you, just play the track. And you're like, there you go. Now you've heard it.
I feel like that may or may not become a ringtone you can download from our website.
A text tone? That would be fabulous.
Every time Danya texts you, there you go.
That's
all right. Moving on to more comic book news. Marvel is finally going to be releasing a comic adaptation of The Force Awakens. So they obviously released the Before the Awakening Star Wars comics. They took over the comics publishing of Star Wars from DC right around the time that they moved to Disney, obviously. And so now they're going to be releasing a Force Awakens comic, the adaptation, and they've released the artwork for it, which I will say looks pretty freaking awesome. All the character drawings and just the cover is pretty iconic, I will say, and I kind of want a full screen, you know, wallpaper for my computer for it. What do you guys think of this artwork?
The cover is stunning. I absolutely love the cover art for this. I think the internal art, which is done by a different artist, it's done by Luke Ross, where Esad Rubic is doing the cover art. I think Luke Ross is better at like Rey's face and female faces. Like, he seems to have gotten that down pat. I think for me, at least, some of Finn's features in this is off, and Poe doesn't look right to me. But I don't know if that's because I've been completely spoiled by Phil Noto's art for the new upcoming Poe comic and seeing him posting bits and pieces of that coming out, because, like, his way of capturing Oscar Isaac's features is, like, uncanny. So I don't know if I've been spoiled by that, but I think some of the internal art is maybe a little bit hit and miss for me, but the Ray art is beautiful, and I'm in love with the cover art.
Yeah, Poe looks a little old. Like, there's something about how these appear that he looks a little older than Oscar Isaac is and than what we saw. But I agree about the cover art. It's fabulous. It evokes a lot of that, like, original trilogy art feel in it, and it's really, really fun.
It doesn't say who the colorist is, because the color on top of the line art will make a huge difference, but it doesn't say who's handling colors for this, so I'm not sure.
Yeah, Ribic painted the first one, the cover, so that's all him. It's interesting that you brought up, Kristen, about the original trilogy. Looking at it with Rey standing right in the middle, she's almost kind of doing, like, the Luke Skywalker pose, other than her hands aren't up in the air. Like, she's right there in the middle holding her staff, and it's like the light. I am not saying anything about this, but she is doing the Luke. Well, hold on, let me finish here. So she's kind of, like, right there in the middle, like, you know, an apex to kind of to the shot, if you will, or the cover. And then you have Finn just to the side of her, which is kind of almost like in the same position that Leia was, except, he's not really grabbing on to, Luke, or in this case, Rey, but he's kind of in that same kind of crouched down position. And then at the bottom is BB-8, which is pretty cool. Like, I really like it that it is definitely invoking classic Star Wars in this paint, in this, cover here in the painting. So I'm digging it a lot, and I would love to, like I said, get a big blow up poster of this, or just nice artwork, version for my computer or something.
Yeah, I agree with that. Though more's the pity that Finn isn't holding on to Rey like the classic poster. I think that would be great.
It would be kind of fun to see that.
Has someone done fan art of that? I feel like that's a missed opportunity if they haven't.
In all honesty, I feel like I've probably seen that in Reddit somewhere. It actually doesn't seem that far off.
Yeah, I would love to see that.
And last bit of news. Last week we talked about, I guess it wasn't last week, it was 2 weeks ago, was it? We talked about This Is Madness, the Star Wars March Madness competition, or brackets, if you will. And it's well on the way going. The first bracket is almost done. We've only got two more you can still vote on. And Danya, tell us how you've been doing.
Not amazingly, but not terribly. let's see. I've gotten quite a few right. I think the best way to go about it is to say which ones I've got wrong. So, let's see. Ones I've got wrong so far. I thought that BB-8 would beat out Ahsoka Tano. I was wrong. Ahsoka beat BB-8. And the other one that I got wrong... What was the other one I got wrong?
Captain Phasma.
One I got wrong is I thought Captain Phasma would beat Count Dooku, but Count Dooku beat Captain Phasma. So right now, I've got two wrong. But otherwise, I'm pretty on track. I mean, I'm gonna be screwed with the BB-8 stuff, because I thought BB-8 would go quite far, but... So I've at least got three wrong. Because that's now not a thing.
Yeah. No, it's actually kind of surprising, because so far, because we haven't gotten to Poe and Leia, and Rey and Ezra are currently voting right now, but so far, none of the new people from The Force Awakens have won. Now, it definitely looks like Rey is going to beat Ezra out pretty handily. She's at 88% compared to Ezra's, 12%.
Maybe because Ezra's a whiny little brat. That's why.
I think they should have just did Ezra slash Snoke there, and people would have voted for him anyway. But see, these are my theories coming out. But I really am excited to see where Leia and Poe end up. I think that's probably the one that is early on that I really want to see how it comes down to. I will say, as much as I love Poe, I'm going to be voting for Leia myself.
Yeah, I mean, I've put Poe down as potentially being the one to win. I don't know. This one's the most difficult one to call for me. It legitimately could go either way. I think it might be a close call. Because, I mean, Poe Dameron is the internet's boyfriend right now, so... Yeah, I don't know.
But you got to remember, it's not just the internet voting. It's Star Wars fans who are visiting StarWars.com.
I know.
And that's where I feel like Leia has a hand down. Just because, you know, like I said, three films before, going to be going forward in this trilogy, the history is there.
Yeah.
But I definitely think Rey will make it far. Now, just a quick hypothetical here. Let's pretend Leia beats Poe out. And just hypothetical. Who would win between a Leia and Rey matchup?
Oh, see, I've got Rey to go all the way to, like, not all the way to the final one where you go like light side versus dark side. I've got her to go to like the final light side battle. So I don't know. It's really difficult to call that because Rey is so loved right now. Like, she's so hugely influential. Like, if you saw any of the coverage of stuff for, like, C2E2, the big Chicago convention over the last weekend, there were so many Rays everywhere. Like, it was insane. Like, I was following bits of it on Twitter, and she's legitimately captured the hearts of people, especially girls. And I think she might ride that wave all the way through. Honestly, I think she'll be really difficult to beat.
I can see that, and that's why I said it'd be after this first meetup. I think the next one's gonna be a little bit difficult because not only do we have a potential Rey versus Leia, or even Rey versus Poe, depending on how that one plays out, but we also have a Luke versus Han. R2 versus Obi-Wan, which is actually, both those could be kind of, dicey, could be pretty close in it. Mm-hmm. Empire side, I think it'll be pretty straightforward. Darth Vader's going to beat out Jabba. Maul will beat out Palpatine. I feel like Ren will probably beat out Count Dooku. And we'll just kind of see where that goes from there. And probably Boba Fett will beat out Grievous or Kallus, you know. And so then we'll see, Boba Fett versus, Kylo Ren or something, but we'll see how it plays. We'll keep you guys up to date on it. All right. So that's the news for this week. We want to move on to our spotlight topic, which is FN2187, or as we like to call him, Finn. He's a big deal in the Resistance.
Yeah, he is.
Just kind of.
They all look like him. Well, That's how the Resistance looks. Anyway, let's start off with Finn real quick. So, obviously, we're introduced to Finn in The Force Awakens. But we were introduced to him in the book Before the Awakening. So, for those who haven't read the book, Before the Awakening is three short stories. It basically leads right up to The Force Awakens. It is kind of a snapshot on where Finn was before. Where Rey was before, and where Poe was before. Kind of how they got to where they were in The Force Awakens. So, with Finn, obviously I call him FN2187, it's kind of interesting because in the Before the Awakens, we learn a little about him and his squad mates. So, we kind of learn about the stormtroopers and everything, and basically Finn is FN2187, and he is the only one in his squad that doesn't really have a nickname. FN2199 goes by nines. There's FN2000 goes by zeros. And Slip, FN2003. So they all kind of have their own nicknames. Even if they kind of play on the call number, they have their own kind of nickname, whereas Finn never gets one, never has one. And it's interesting because it is Slip who is killed at the beginning on Jakku that kind of makes Finn kind of do what he does in the film. So what do you guys think about him just not getting a nickname?
I mean, it's, you kind of see it playing out a little bit in the actual story itself, that as praised as he is by stuff like Captain Phasma, and for as successful as he is as a stormtrooper, he's not really beloved by other people in his squad. Like, it's, that's probably why he didn't get a nickname, because they didn't see him on the same level as them, and they didn't kind of look at him like that, which is really sad. It's really, really sad that, you know, this is the only life that he's ever known, and he just, he doesn't fit in. And then when he gets out of the First Order, he doesn't he doesn't initially necessarily fit in anywhere else either. So it's, it just, this also lends, like, something more to when he originally meets Poe as well. The fact that throughout his whole life, these are people that he has known, and they don't care enough about him to give him a nickname. And the first person that he comes into contact and meets outside of the First Order gives him another name. Like, yeah, I don't know. It gives me a lot of feelings.
Yeah, like, basically within minutes of meeting each other and getting out of danger, he has a nickname. And it, you know, it didn't take Poe more than a few minutes. Like, that's fabulous. Yeah, you can definitely see why he seems to slip into the Resistance a little easier than life as a stormtrooper.
Yeah, and I agree with you completely on that. It's one of those things where he was praised as, like you said, he was part of the top 1%. We learned that in the book. He's ruined the bell curve for everyone else. And when he goes ahead and meets Poe, you know, he even tells him, my name is FN2187. He's like, I'm not going to call you that. I'm going to call you Finn. Is that all right? And he just has this, like, grin on his face. Like, yeah, all right. Like, I'm just picturing John Boyega, you know, being John Boyega, just being excited about getting a nickname in Star Wars. And that's kind of what it comes down to. So I agree. It's kind of interesting that he has spent his entire life being brought up as a stormtrooper. And we know this, that he spent his entire life there, because even in the film, we see a picture of him as a little kid on the console when General Hux pulls up his file with Kylo Ren. So it's interesting that he never actually, I guess he did make friends, because that is actually kind of what leads to him leaving. Because his biggest flaw, and the biggest thing he's been reprimanded for, is he is an ideal soldier. He is superior in many, many ways, except he shows concern for his squad mates, and that's not acceptable, at least not according to Phasma. And obviously when Slip dies on Jakku and puts his hand and puts the mark right on Finn's face, that's kind of the catalyst that moves him to break Poe out. Not because he cares about Poe or the Resistance, but because he needs a pilot to get off the station.
Yeah, and the other thing with that is that basically at the point where he's told to stop, because the mission on Jakku is like their first real mission outside of like simulations. So up until that point, they've just been running simulations over and over and over again. And in those simulations, he keeps going back for Slip. He will, like, he breaks formation. He makes sure that he, like, he covers his back. He makes sure that they all get out in the end. And Phasma's basically was like, hey, you know, next time you leave him behind, because we're only as strong as our weakest link, and the weak links, we basically just need to, that's it, they're cannon fodder, basically. And she tells him, she orders him to leave Slip behind next time. So when you see them go to Jakku, that's basically what leads to Slip getting killed, essentially, is the fact that Finn doesn't have his back because he's been ordered not to. Which is kind of understandable for that being the catalyst for him being like, yeah, I'm piecing out of this nonsense and breaking Poe out And I just love the why does everyone want to go back to Jakku? But yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's such a devastating little story. Like, it's so, it just, and this is the one that opens the book as well. It's like, I can't deal with it.
You sort of get the impression that he's one of those like straight A students who does everything by the book, letter of the book, until he gets put in the position where he needs to live it. And the second you're thrown out into the real world, it's like, yeah, no, this isn't for me. And they go the opposite direction. Like, we've seen those stories being told a million different ways. And it's kind of nice to see that sort of story ground, you know, that grounds his part of this story. And so I find that really, really easy to relate to, because I've definitely read like a version of that before. And so, yeah, that's really fun to learn about him.
So just a quick correction to what Danya said. This Jakku is not their very Finn's very first mission or his squad's first mission. It was his second. They left their very first mission somewhere in the Outer Rim to go to Jakku. So it was their second mission.
I thought Jakku was the first.
No, Jakku is the second one. The book, just because I know some people will probably catch that, and I want to correct it while I have the book open right now. Basically, the section on Finn goes through a bunch of training, a couple training things, different things, and then they go through the very first one where you start to see Finn kind of deal with morality. He's told to kill somebody and he doesn't want to do it, but Slips does. So it kind of makes Slips as, kind of redeem Slips in the eyes of Phasma. And then of course they go to Jakku and he, like Danya said, he was told not to care about his squad mates. And that's what happened. And of course we see, Nines call Finn a traitor later on because he left. So it definitely, I can feel like I understand, like, he did bond with them, but he was never one of them, if that makes sense. Like, he never got that nickname. He never was as close to the rest of his fellow cadets. But beyond that, though, because he never got a nickname and, he moves to Jakku and that's why he leaves, we also learned that they had downtime. So, what do you guys think Finn did with his fellow cadets in their free time? Did they go to the bar?
What do stormtroopers do when not fighting?
Like, exactly.
That's the question.
That's the real question. They did have downtime. And my guess is they probably did things like read books, read first order approved literature and propaganda movies and stuff. But, like, did they go to a bar? Did they ever, did he have a dog, a pet, or anything like that? What do you guys think?
I don't know that the First Order would allow pets necessarily. I think that, especially in the Stormtrooper program, and especially for someone who was pretty much on track for command, because that's the kind of trajectory that we see Finn on, is that he seems to be on his way to becoming an officer of some kind. And I doubt that he would probably have been allowed a pet, because that would have just encouraged something like sentiment, which is something that they were trying to stomp out. So why would they give him or allow him to have something that would encourage compassion when that's something that they want to discourage? So I can't see that they would have pets or anything like that. Similarly, with stuff like alcohol or anything like that, I don't know that they would, because that would loosen people up a lot and it would ease the way to give in to like really strong emotions. I think that anything that would aid that wouldn't be something that they would allow for like stormtroopers on that kind of level. But as for what they would do with their downtime, I'm not really sure. I mean, we know that Finn knows history. So history of like the universe and events, current events that are happening, obviously through the lens of like whatever the First Order is feeding him, but we know that he at least knows of recent history events. So I would imagine it would be stuff like that. It would be it would be things that he could read or watch, but it would be in the aid of making him a better stormtrooper.
Yeah, I could see them like giving him simulations or things too, like anything that would help in battle. Like, yeah. Other than that, they polish their helmets. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm just a little sad. You just kind of ruined my idea of him having a goldfish named Gil or something like that. But I don't know. I would like to think that they would let him be more human-like, but I guess that might be why there's that clone kind of comment from Kylo Ren. Because they maybe have too much free will, too much, you know, kind of on their own, being able to do stuff. But I think you're probably right more about, like, recent history and maybe videos and stuff like that that are related, because I don't remember the name of it. I'm trying to find it in the Force Awakens book right now, but Finn obviously knows about Wrath Tars that obviously Han Solo is transporting, and there was apparently some big massacre somewhere, which...
It was the Trillia Massacre, wasn't it?
Maybe. I don't know off the top of my head. Maybe. But yeah, so some massacre, and obviously, you know, he knows about it, so that's something that he wouldn't have learned just as a stormtrooper, unless there was, like, a tactical thing to learn from it. Maybe he knows how to fight Wrath Tars too? I don't know. But yeah, so it's just kind of weird that he, you know, although I guess maybe I just don't come from a military background, I just find one of these things where, you know, he was not an individual, and so much so that he didn't even get a nickname is something that kind of bothers me. Which is probably why I like him so much, because, like, you see him grow so much in the film. But beyond him in the Force the Awakening book, before The Force Awakens, we also learn that he's a big deal in the Resistance. He tells that to Rey. Very big deal. And to Han Solo. And that really comes down to him kind of seeing a way away from the First Order, is by telling everyone that he is in the Resistance. What do you guys think... he felt like, why he felt it was good to say he was in the Resistance to them?
I mean, for to start off, I guess it would be to get back off Jakku to start with. I think that BB-8 and someone like Rey would probably be like the vessel to get him away from Jakku and to get him away from the potential of, like, the First Order catching up to him. So I think that for at least a small part of it, it would be the idea of protection. Like, someone who would be able to get him away from that. Obviously, along the way, he finds friendship and a genuine connection with Rey and with other people. But I think initially it would be escape, I think. Because we see that a little bit in respect to him wanting to run, which is a completely valid sort of emotion to have, especially when he is so intimately aware of what the First Order can do.
So. See, I find that weird, though, because, like, the Resistance is not, like, he's not a police officer, he's not anything that has authority, especially on a planet like Jakku, if you will. So, like, why would you even... You know, I feel like it's kind of like you see it with Star Wars Rebels a little bit. It's like, by admitting that you're a rebel, you're instantly put a, you know, target on your head. Like, so I don't really get why he would pick a you know, say he's part of the Resistance versus just, you know, oh no, I'm what I am or something else. Like, I get he does that because BB-8 is from the Resistance, and he recognizes BB-8. But maybe he says he's from the Resistance more as something simple, trying to impress Rey. I don't know if it's anything deeper than that.
I was gonna say, and Poe, who he knows is a part of the Resistance, gave him his name, and, you know, was the first person, I think, probably in his life to, like, make him feel important. So he may have continued that line with Rey because it, you know, it felt right at first. And this is, like, you know, within 24 hours of escaping Starkiller Base and, like, having a chance to be a person. So I can see him, like, just using it because what he had seen of it so far was good to him. Like, it felt right.
That makes sense. I guess I'll buy that right now. I really want to see more of Finn in episode 8, kind of how he grows with the Resistance. Because I almost wonder if he wakes up and he's going to want to leave. Like, he doesn't really, like, the only thing, to jump ahead in our notes here, like, the only thing I feel like he has that keeps him at the Resistance, it's not even Poe. I feel like it's just Rey. And even then, like, he was willing to leave her and everything behind on Takodana. So, like, I wonder what he's going to, how he's going to react and how he's going to, you know, what his character's going to do when he actually wakes up in episode 8.
Okay, we do see him wanting to run away on Takodana, but he changes his mind while he's still there and comes back.
But why did he change his mind?
Because of Rey,
exactly.
Yeah.
So,
at that point, he doesn't know that Poe's alive.
That's true. And he still doesn't. Well, he does know. He sees him at the end.
Yeah.
Before he goes off the Starkiller base.
Yeah. So, you know, if he wakes up and he sees Poe, and he's probably now going to at least be trusted quite a lot by the Resistance, because even though Han doesn't make it back with them, he's still a hero in to a certain extent because of the information that he gave him, because he actually managed to help stop Starkiller Base. So he's already carved out a place for himself, or home for himself, at the Resistance. And at this point, he's already turned around and come back. So we see that on Takodana, and we see him bringing Rey back again, going to Starkiller Base to bring her back to the Resistance. Like, you see him starting to believe in it more and more and more. So I don't necessarily think that he would run away. I think that maybe we'll see a progression of him putting his skill sets to use in the Resistance. Now, whether that means that he will actually fight or not, or whether he will be like more of a tactician like Leia is a little bit, you know, I think there's definitely a space for him in the Resistance, and I would like to see that explored, especially alongside Poe, because, yeah, on Takodana, he doesn't know Poe is alive. He thinks, on Takodana, that the only person who has ever given him a sliver of, like, attention outside of, like, just being a weapon, you know, the only person to, like, genuinely care at one point was Poe, prior to meeting Rey. And he comes back for Rey, and then he finds out Poe is still alive. So I think those two are, like, his anchor back. Like, they are the first people to genuinely give him anything without asking for anything in return. So I don't know. I don't think we're going to see him continue to want to run away. I think we've already seen him conquer that and come back. I don't know. I do want to see more of him in the next movie, though, and see what he does next.
It's interesting. So, the reason why I say it's kind of interesting is because, yeah, he knows Poe, and Poe gave him the nickname of Finn and everything. But going back to Starkiller Base, he gave the information on Starkiller Base purely to get back there to save Rey. Because you're right, he tried to leave and he didn't because of Rey. And when he was on Starkiller Base, you even see the interaction with him and Han about Han saying, hey, what are you doing? We have to do this because, you know, there's people counting on him. The Resistance is counting on him. Poe is counting on him. But that's his secondary worry. He's not really worried about the Resistance so much. He's more worried about just Rey. And then he does my favorite lines, like, we'll use the Force. And of course, clearly he doesn't understand how the Force works. So much so that Han Solo has to tell him that's not how it works at all. So and it's weird, just because if Rey is gone when he wakes up, I don't know if it would be in his character to stick around or to go try to find her, or, you know, and that's where I'm like, I don't know if he has any strong feelings to the Resistance yet, other than I feel like they'll protect him from the First Order, which I know is, like, in him, he needs to get away from because of the trauma, you know, he's been traumatized by them, of what they've done. But we'll see. So the last bit, we do see that Finn does know how to use weapons. He can shoot, and he's really good with a blaster. Obviously, we talked about how he was in the top 1%, so he's definitely not like a normal trooper. He can hit something. He also knows how to fight with a lightsaber. We saw him and FN-2199 fight with the little baton on Takodana, and he also takes up the lightsaber against Kylo Ren. Unfortunately, Kylo Ren does hurt him at the end. What do you guys think of his saber skills?
I mean, he has some skills with it. Obviously, against someone like Kylo, who does have a little bit more training, and with someone who, well, where I'm assuming that Finn doesn't have any force sensitivity, we don't really know yet. But without that to kind of help guide him and tap into, it's mostly just based on his weapons training. But it he does have some skills with it, and he holds his own and actually gets the better of quite a few people. So I don't know, he's very skilled. I just it's also a little bit obvious that in combat situations it's a very different situation to what he's been used to in, like, simulations. So while he is exceptionally talented and skilled, it's putting it to use as well. One thing I would hope to see them explore a little bit is his relationship to using weapons and being used for violence, because obviously that's what he's been brought up to do. Like, his whole life, he has basically been brought up to be a weapon for something. And I wonder if, given the choice, we might see him choose a different path. But I don't know. I think he's very skilled. He's obviously very skilled. He manages to hold his own against Kylo Ren for a very long time without having any specific experience with lightsabers. So all in, like, he's more skilled than a lot of the other characters in fighting. So
yeah, I could see him using his abilities with the lightsaber and whatnot to maybe make inroads with the resistance, like use what he knows about fighting to find a place that he feels more at home. Because I don't necessarily know if him being in battle all the time is what he would want. I mean, possibly, because he is proficient at it. Like, he is good, but you know, he might be able to find something that fits his personality more, something that he's just more comfortable with, but he can use training and getting into, you know, using the weapons more personally rather than just being technically skilled with them, to kind of find himself outside of the First Order.
Yeah, I see that. And I would actually kind of say I hope he actually joins the First Order, you know, the Resistance, not the First Order, joins the Resistance completely, and I kind of almost see him as, like, you know, kind of like how the Han Solo character, if you will, kind of like how Han Solo came back, and he became a general in the Rebel Alliance. I feel like Finn's going to do the same thing. He's not, you know, a scoundrel and a smuggler like Han, but he definitely has, in my mind, he's that kind of the same role, if you will. He is kind of the outsider who doesn't really have a strong connection to it, but there's something that draws him back in. And when he does get drawn in, like, he's there. He's a friend for life. And you see that, like you guys said, with Poe and with Rey. So I would like to see him be a commando, kind of leading something on the ground. I would love for him to come up against Phasma, you know, face Phasma one-to-one or something like that, and him almost do, like, a Han Solo thing. It's like, oh, and bang, she's gone, like, right away, like, not even paying attention to it. So I would love to see him kind of evolve as a character that way.
I would definitely love to see some kind of confrontation between him and Phasma. I would love to see a little bit more exploration of Phasma first. So I'm not sure that I would like to see that confrontation in the next movie. I think maybe it would be good for the final film out of the trilogy. but I would definitely love to see that relationship explored separately and then tease out a little bit more, because not everyone's going to have read the book. Not everyone is going to.
So before you go any further, right now, as you're talking about, I kind of am imagining what Han Solo versus Boba Fett, kind of what we saw in Empire Strikes Back. We see Boba Fett doesn't really say anything other than he's worth more to me, you know, he's worth a lot to me dead still. And then you see him at, you know, in Return of the Jedi, and he just hits him on accident, and then he kills Boba Fett by falling into the Sarlacc.
Boba Fett, wow.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So I kind of almost want it to be like a nonchalant, like a big buildup that, you know, maybe Phasma has this, you know, vendetta against him. Like, I want to explore Phasma's character, because definitely she's pretty cool. And obviously she's leading all the troopers and everything and training them. So I want to learn more about the character, but at the same time, like, I really want it to be a nonchalant, kind of like Boba Fett versus Han type thing, where he's like, oh, there's Phasma. Okay, she's done. Like, I don't want him to kill her, but something like a Sarlacc or something like that, that is funny. I don't know. I think it'd be kind of a nice mirroring of the films. But yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I would want that. If only because I would like to see them moving away too much from too much mirroring of stuff from the original trilogy. Like, I like when they give, like, very subtle nods back to it, but I don't think I'd want to see a lot of stuff play out in exactly the same way over the course of this new trilogy. I do think that obviously they've set it up to be a really great parallel between those two, in the respect of, like, Finn was being groomed for a leadership position, like Phasma was in charge of his group of his squadron of stormtroopers, and she was, like, getting him ready for leadership pretty much. And then obviously we see in The Force Awakens then him basically getting the upper hand on her and forcing her to shut everything down and throwing her in the garbage compactor and so on. And, you know, you've already got that kind of need for revenge on her part a little bit, or wanting to exact it. And I don't know, I think it would be a nice parallel to see play out and eventually see them come up against each other. I would like to see that in maybe a bigger way, but I think teasing out their backstory separately would be quite cool, especially as a way to explore Phasma as a character as well, because we definitely didn't get enough of her for my liking, and definitely not enough of that relationship they teased out between the two of them in Before the Awakening. I'd love to see a little bit more of that.
I think it would be really fun if they set up the mirror, like, made it seem like that's exactly what's going to happen. And, like, he does give her, like, a little nudge or something. And then she kind of looks him, like, square in the eye and says, like, do you think that's going to be that easy? And then they end up in this massive battle. Like, I think it'd be fun if they set up the mirror and then just kind of, like, took it further from that. But, yeah, no, I like all of... I could see it going either way, really.
Yeah, I don't know. I want him to become just an awesome badass, is really what I come down to. I want him to be this trilogy's Han Solo. He's already got the cool jacket and everything, so... Yeah. Plus, he's a good shot.
Or does he? I mean, he got hit in the back with Kylo Ren's lightsaber. Do we not need to assume that that's destroyed the jacket?
Oh, they'll fix the jacket.
He'll fix the jacket. That's from Poe, right?
That jacket's important.
Jacket's important. It's what he, you know, he got as he learned his name for the first time. So he's going to save that jacket. All right. Yeah. So that's our spotlight topic, Finn. Is there anything else, guys, that you can think of? I think we covered quite a bit about Finn since we know very little about him. What do you guys think? Anything else?
No, he still has my favorite line. I covered it last week. The droid, please. Droid, please. I love that. I love his relationship with BB-8, actually.
Yes.
Just in general. I absolutely love their interactions so much.
Okay. Well, thank you everyone for listening to this week's episode of Resistance Radio. As always, I'm Mikey.
I'm Danya.
And I'm Kristen.
Thank you very much, everyone. guys, I actually do have one more thing. I have one more thing to throw in here. So before The Force Awakens was released, there was a character, a toy of Finn that went up on Amazon. I don't know if any of you guys remember this.
Yes.
Yeah, you know what I'm going to get to.
I know exactly what you're going with.
And they Amazon labeled it Finn Calrissian. What do you think of that?
Hello, what have we here?